This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human animal connection.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show. I'm your host, Michael Overly, and I'm with Jeannie Joseph, and we cannot wait to discuss some cool stuff.
Yeah, we are talking about our principle number 10 in the human animal connection, which is called animals have opinions. And what this, we think it's pretty exciting to have the point of view that animals have opinions. This doesn't mean that they always should get what they want. Like they can't always have a treat 24/7, you know, but to recognize that they have opinions changes how we relate to them. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
I love it. I'm full of opinions.
I know. Aren't we all? We all are. But you know, what's interesting is that we don't always feel heard with our opinions. We don't always feel seen with our opinions. We don't always feel felt. You know, we don't always have the experience that others who share our world care about our opinions or notice our opinions or are interested in relating to our opinions. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to become infants that get their, you know, their needs met every second. You know, it's not about that. But it is about recognizing that animals do have a point of view. They have things they like. They have things they don't like. They have things they want. They have things they don't want. And just by recognizing that that is an inner experience that they're having changes how we view them. And that's what we're all about in the human-animal connection, is changing the way people relate to animals.
So you're more of a human trainer.
We are, you know, when we do training, we say our training is about 80% training the human and 20% training the animal. The animals often learn very quickly if we're clear, if they know what it is that we're asking for, because often we don't realize we're giving mixed messages. Like if we go, hey, you know, that's two messages, you know, it's the sound and it's this motion that the dog has to interpret. So if we're giving the dog a cue, like sit, and we give an excited body motion, that's confusing for them because that's two pieces of data that they have to, that don't match actually. And they have to learn that. So the human has to learn to say, sit, you know, to remove motion so that the dog doesn't have to interpret the motion, because dogs are very busy interpreting our facial expressions, our tone of voice, our energy, our mood, and our motion. And so we, as humans, have to learn how to communicate in a way that is friendly to dogs, that respects their way of viewing the world.
When you say they have opinions, and from what we've just been discussing here, there's obviously this level of intelligence that I think a lot of people don't understand. So are you saying that they're sentient beings?
I am. And I know you believe this, and I'm, you know, hoping to inspire other people. And what we mean by that is that they have sensations, they have opinions, they have feelings, they have moods, they have ways that they respond to the world. You know, they have preferences about things, they have choices that they make, they have strategies that they use to get what they want, and so on. And, you know, the next step, once you say that animals, well, it's the first step to recognize that animals have emotions, and then that they have opinions, that they have thoughts, they have desires. The next thing you say is that they're sentient, they have sensation, they experience things, you know, they have, and then the final step, and maybe not everyone is ready for this, but we're suggesting that people consider the question is, do animals have consciousness? And that may be a big leap for some people. And for other people, that's like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, so it just depends, you know, where you sit on that. And we're not trying to convince anyone of this, but we suggest that you consider the question, is it possible that animals have consciousness?
Well, I used to be in the one camp of right? there's no possible way.
Right.
That's because my level of awareness, my level of consciousness was not such that I could hold that.
Exactly.
And now I understand it's absolutely true. And they have, like I said, this different type of intelligence and this level of wisdom that we sometimes can't even access.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's continually amazing when you consider the point of view that animals are conscious, because then you begin to see examples of it. You know what I mean? Like once you consider the possibility, then it's like everywhere. You see it in lizards, you see it in trees, you see it in rocks. I know that's hard for some people, but you see it in all living things. And like this morning, I sat down with my coffee and I was just thinking, you know, being near this beautiful tree, I just thought I'd connect in, tune in. And this visiting dog, this dog who's visiting with us, felt that energy, came up and decided that this was a good time to do a healing session for both of us. And she really showed me this very beautiful energy that is kind of, I came to understand about her, like her particular soul path and what she was working with in this lifetime. She had been a reservation dog, so she had been a tough cookie out on, you know, surviving. And she's just the sweetest thing in the world. You know, she just is amazing. And we had this beautiful experience. And it's because I'm willing to consider that she has consciousness, that she chose to come to me in that moment to have this experience and gave me the, you know, we had this meeting of the minds, you might say, in terms of what energy we were going to work with and the particular type of healing that she was interested in the, in that moment. And it also showed me, not only for her, but for myself, it was very valuable for me to understand this particular phase that I'm in. We just moved, you know, and there's some unsettled energy. And so she was showing me a particular way into peacefulness in the context of the unsettled, like it, the unsettled is true and real. I mean, that's, you know, there are boxes here. I can't wave them away with my mind, you know, like some people want to declassify with their mind. You know? I can't do that. No, but she was showing me a way of relating. And I had seen it before, but somehow with her, she gave me an experience that was just so beautiful. And if I didn't have the point of view that animals are conscious, I might have missed it. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of subtle. So that, you know, for us, to say that animals have opinions for us is a doorway for other people in our teaching work with the human-animal connection to say, okay, so maybe it's a big stretch for you right now to say that animals are conscious and what does that mean and how does that, you know, can we still eat them? I mean, you know, these are, you know, maybe it's too much for people to think about consciousness. But interestingly enough, a group of scientists met in England, in Cambridge, I think in 2012, and they created like a little manifesto called the Cambridge Declaration of Consciousness. And from their point of view, these are like the top scientists and philosophers in the field of you know, thought and consciousness. And they have come to the conclusion that you cannot say that animals are not conscious, even though we don't yet have proof. And as one scientist said to me once, he said, I can't prove that you're conscious, meaning me, a human. How can I say that animals are conscious? But, you know, it's the same thing. I can't prove that you love me. You know, I can say I love you. I can't prove you love me, but I do believe it. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting, we're at an interesting crossroads in that the scientists are beginning to explore that question, that we have so much evidence of animal emotions, of animal strategy, of animal thinking, of animal planning, of animal choosing, of animal empathy, all these things that just make it harder and harder to say that animals are not conscious. So we're kind of excited to be, you know, alive at this time that the animals are letting us know that they are really amazing beings.
Well, it's fantastic. So the conditions in the universe and in our society had to be right for this to become more accessible for everybody else, right?
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. You know, I mean, in, you know, Darwin, in his book, Expression of Emotions in Animals, you know, he was leaning into this, but of course it was too early to have scientific evidence to back up what he was saying. And, you know, he knew. You know, and J. Allen Boone, as you know, the author of Kinship with All Life, he knew in a book published in 1956. So there were, you know, people, and even before that, I'm going to remember his name in a moment. I'll come to think of it. But anyway, 100 years ago, he was really a forerunner in this. And I think his name was Long, the last name. I'll get it for you. But anyway, it's okay. A wonderful book. It's a wonderful book. It's called How Animals Speak, I think, or How Animals Talk. And he really explored this. So yeah, we're at a beautiful time in history in the sense that, well, let's put it this way. Their native traditions have believed this for as long as they've been around, you know, that animals were conscious and that you could speak to animals and we could speak to them and they could speak to us. And this was natural. And then we lost it all for a couple hundred years, you know, in our so-called civilized world. And now we're rediscovering it.
civilized man.
Well, yeah.
Even Albert Schweitzer hinted towards some of these things in his book, Reverence for All Life.
So it's been
out there for a while, but I think more people are awake and aware now to the possibilities. So
yeah, more people are hungry to know that. And if you share your life with an animal, it's probably, if I ask people who share their life with a dog or a cat or a horse, you know, does your horse or your cat or your dog have emotions? They'll say yes. I just remembered the name, How Animals Talk, is by William J. Long, and it was written 100 years ago. And it's the most advanced work, I think, on animal communication. And it was written 100 years ago. And of course, it was very controversial then, you know, not everybody was ready for that. But it's just an exciting book to read if you are looking for a book to read.
Yeah, I've never read it. I'll have to get it.
I know it's a very unknown book, but the foreword is by Rupert Sheldrake, I think, and maybe Mark Beckoff. So, you know, it's a wonderful book. I mean, some of the language is outdated, like he calls animals the beasts, you know, it's a few things like that, but that was just the time, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the beasts.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you a story about Charlotte, who's a donkey. And this is one of the ways that when I was learning, she really helped me understand about animals having opinions. So she was an elderly donkey, and she was a friend of mine, has a rescue. It's called Wild Horse Haven, and it's in Safford, Arizona. And he had several donkeys, and they were picking on her. She wasn't getting her share of the food. And she was losing weight because they were picking on her because she was old. And sometimes that happens in a herd, is that they will, you know, root out the weak one to protect the strong ones and so on. And so he was prepared to give her away, you know, to send her to another horse rescue. But this other horse rescue didn't have any donkeys. And where she was, she had a llama, there were other donkeys. And even though they were picking on her, she didn't really want to leave. So we were loading her up onto the trailer, and she was very good about loading into trailers. It wasn't a trailer issue, but she did not want to go. She understood what was happening, and she didn't want to go. And I said to Afton, well, would you like me to communicate with her and ask her what she wants and what she feels? And he's a good old boy, but he said, okay, you know, he kind of trusted me. And so I talked with Charlotte, and Charlotte said, I want to stay here, but I want to be on the other side of the fence of the donkeys. So I want to be with the llama. I still want to see the other donkeys, but I want a fence between us so I can eat in peace. And he listened to me, and he put her on the other side with the llamas. And so she could still see the other donkeys, but now it was safe for her to eat and graze all day long because she wasn't having to be chased away from the food. And this was a beautiful solution that neither one of us would have thought of intellectually. I mean, it was, he just thought he had to give her away. And what happened was, is that as she began to get stronger and thrive, she became his best reading donkey. The children would come and sit in the chair. The minute they would sit in the chair with their book, she would come over and stand right next to them over their shoulder, look at the book, watch them read, look at them when they looked at her. And she was, you know, just this beautiful therapy donkey. And if we hadn't listened to her opinion, she just would have been languishing in another rescue with no other donkeys. And donkeys like to be with other donkeys. So she had an opinion about what was best for her. And by listening to her, we found this beautifully elegant solution that not only helped everybody, but, you know, changed the lives of many children, because reading to the donkey just really opened their hearts and gave them a chance to read without being corrected by adults, and just made it safer for them and fun for them. And they just wanted to come every day and read to the donkey, and they were convinced that she understood every word. You know, it was very sweet.
That's amazing. Oh, God. I want to spend all day with the animals, right? And then get my humanness back online, and then I can go back into the world and deal with people.
Yeah, exactly. And I have another story I want to share about some cats. And this was a client I was working with. I do individual consultations, and she had a dog that was a rescue and was pretty... we later discovered this dog was part wolf. Okay, so he had some real primal energy, and she had two lovely little cats, and she had a previous dog that got along well with the cats, and she had hoped that this new dog would get along well with the cats. And we were in training to help the dog not be so reactive, because whenever the cats would move, she would chase them. So we went through experiments putting the cats in a protected tent, you know, with a little crate and tent and area where they could be in the same room, smell each other, see each other, but not have contact. And we were doing all these different steps and we were making a little bit of progress. And finally, I said, well, wait a minute, maybe we should ask the cats what they think about this whole thing. And the cats said it should be more fair. They said sometimes the dog should be in the crate and they walk around the dog, right? You know, and this was something that we just hadn't thought of, you know, just, you know, our minds hadn't produced that idea. But listening to the cats gave us this great idea. And that resulted in the cats feeling more empowered. And then they had less fear behaviors, more, less running, and the dog was less reactive. So this was a great example of listening to the opinions of cats in this situation at home. And it made a big improvement.
I love that.
Yeah.
What a great story.
Yeah. Hey,
let's take a quick break here.
Sure.
Hey, friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, welcome back to Human Animal Connection Show. So you have another story, but this one's about a puppy.
Yeah.
And what happens if you don't pay attention?
Yeah, it was really, really a great little story. A family that of neighbors with three young children got a puppy, you know, all, with all good intentions, you know, to have a puppy for the kids. But the kids were very energetic. And the minute they brought the puppy home, they all wanted to play and cuddle and all of this other stuff. And I watched this puppy get over-amped. That's Bailey coming into the scene, which is fine. I watched this puppy get over-amped by all this attention. Good attention, but just too much. I mean, this puppy had just been taken from his litter, from his mom, was in a new house, a new environment, new smells, new people, new cuddling, you know, much more stimulation than he ever had. And the puppy literally got overstimulated. And I suggested this to them, you know, that maybe the puppy needed to rest. And they didn't quite believe me, you know. And as the puppy grew up, the puppy began to disappear, became like a Houdini. They couldn't create any kind of gate or fence the puppy couldn't get out of. And the puppy would hide, and they would call the puppy, and the puppy wouldn't come. And sometimes the puppy would come to my house and hide in my house or under my car, or different places. And, you know, what the puppy needed was just a time out, you know, from the kids and from the energy, even though it was positive, even though they loved the puppy and all, everybody loved the puppy. But the puppy was just getting over-amped by all the energy and would take these timeouts. And so the puppy wouldn't come when they call, even though the puppy knew her name. And so this was an example of not paying attention to the puppy's opinions about when was enough play and attention, even positive attention, can be too much, especially for a little puppy. And this is another example of how we need to pay attention to the rhythms, the timing, the pacing of animals. And by paying attention to their opinions, we can tell when they want to rest and when they want to engage.
Yeah. Well, we can learn from this as well, because I'm similar to that puppy, right? I get overwhelmed. Too much stimulation. I'm just like, whoa. And I have to pull back. Maybe right. I have to leave, whatever it is, because my nervous system is too sensitive to all that stimulation for long periods of time.
Exactly. We all have that, and people have it in varying degrees. So some people are more on the sensitive perspective. So like, we've got three dogs in the house right now, two that live with us and two that are one visiting. They all three have different temperaments in terms of what they like. And, you know, when, you know, like my dog, Sophia, she's older. She's, you know, 9 or 10. She's rescued, I don't know for sure, but somewhere in the 9-10 range. And she needs a lot more solo time than the other two. So this is just something to pay attention to really create structures, or to recognize the opinions of Sophia, the opinions of Bailey, the opinions of Lucy, and they're all different. And sometimes it can feel a little challenging to juggle them all. But once you recognize that these are just different needs, different temperaments, different styles, different energies, then we can make sure that everybody is relaxed and thriving.
Let's talk about shelter dogs, because in that environment, frequently it is completely overwhelming. So talk to me about talking to shelter dogs.
Yeah. So they're in an environment and shelters do the best that they can, you know, thank God for shelters. But the fact is that they're prisons for dogs. You know, they're in solitary confinement and they can't make any choices. They're not able to choose. I want to get out of here right now. I'd rather do something else. I'd rather be on a soft bed. I'd rather be with a human. I'd rather go potty now. They don't have a lot of choices, or they don't have any choices really that they can make. And they're simply in a state of sensory overload. And when I go in and start working with them and I begin talking to a dog that has, you know, for the first time, sometimes I get a response, "You talking to me?" You know, like, what? You know, somebody's listening. It's almost like, almost not a shock, but a surprise, you know, at first. And then they recognize, this is someone who's listening to my opinions. And even though I can't change everything in that moment, maybe there's one thing I can change. I can change whether or not the dog wants to be, you know, I'm in the kennel with them at this point, that whether the dog wants contact or just wants me to sit still and let the dog come to me. I'm going to be paying as much attention as I can to the slightest nuances, opinions. Does the dog want to hear my voice or does the dog want silence? Does the dog want eye contact or not having eye contact? I'm trying to pay attention to every opinion that the dog has in that moment and honor it. And then that builds trust. And once we have trust, then we can go further. Then we can have touch and then I can do some healing massage. Or then if we're going to go on a walk, it's going to be calmer. So everything gets better if they understand that here's a person who's listening to my opinion. And it's the same thing in human relationships. We like to be around people who, you know, like, you know, I know you have a wonderful partner and I know she's prepared for you to have these moments where you need to, you know, have just time out for yourself, just sensory time out. You need to not engage and not interact. And you just need 10 minutes or half an hour or whatever it is to reset your own nervous system. And to recognize this, that animals have opinions, helps us to help them regulate their own nervous system, which leads to less destructive behavior, leads to less trauma in animals. When we're working with traumatized animals, what we're doing is we are teaching them how to re-regulate their nervous system so they're not in the automatic trauma response when there's stimulation.
The work that I've done for healing my own stuff, issues in that work continues, but it's so similar, right? So how can we not see that connection that, you know, we are literally all connected?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we call this work the human-animal connection, because first of all, we are animals, but second of all, we can connect with them in deeper ways. And that when we connect with an animal, it actually changes our nervous system. We actually go into the ventral state, you know, which is the vagus nerve, which is the anecdote to stress. So by connecting with animals, we create de-stress for ourselves and for them. But we have to be in a peaceful state. If we're just, you know, hey, you know, whatever, you know, that's not necessarily as healing as when we're in the true healing state. That's when the healing really occurs.
Do dogs get jealous?
Yes, I believe they do, you know, and I guess that people have different opinions on this, but I'll tell you why I feel that way. Just in this situation where we have a visiting dog, so three dogs in the house, and when one gets attention from one of us, the other dog will go to the other person, you know, even if it's not like my dog, Sophia, will go visit Maureen, you know, to get some love if I'm giving Lucy some attention or if I'm giving Bailey some attention. And we watch this little dance, you know, they go, oh, she's getting attention. What about me? You know, and they'll like Lucy's very, it's funny because Lucy's actually a submissive dog in many ways, although she's becoming less submissive, which is good. You know, she had been a tough reservation dog, so she had to fend for herself, you know, wild on the reservation, probably in a pack. But so she is getting much more willing to nose in to get her love, you know what I mean, which is sort of funny. And, you know, it's Bailey is very tolerant. He says, okay, I, you know, it's like the little girl needs some love, and he steps back and he'll just go to the next person and get some love. But it's this very hilarious dance as they kind of rotate between the two of us humans to get some love if someone else is getting love. And so we see these reactions, like Sophia, if I'm giving another dog love, she's gives me this look and marches over to the next person to get some love. And it's very funny, you know, and there's enough love to go around, but it you can see these reactions. And I forget which scientist did the study, but they have done the study where they showed that they're humans interacting with even a stuffed animal and the dogs reacted. So there's now good scientific evidence that shows that dogs do feel jealous. So if you have jealousy as a human, it's a natural biological experience. It doesn't mean we have to, you know, act out or deal with it in the worst ways possible. We have choices about how we deal with that response, but the response is natural.
Tell me about Jim Key.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do we have time? Are we out of time, Michael?
Oh, we're at 25. We're good.
Oh, great. Okay, great. So good. I can tell you the story about beautiful Jim Key, who was a horse owned by a former slave. And this, it's such a beautiful story. It's a true story, and everyone should read this story. But he taught this horse how to read the alphabet and then ultimately how to spell. And this horse could beat sixth graders in spelling contests. I mean, just amazing. And what his person did, Doc Key was his name, he would always ask the horse what his opinion was. And they, you know, went on to become very famous. They were at World's Fairs. I think 10 million people saw them do these performances where the horse would do these amazing displays of intelligence and spell words and add and subtract and open things. And oh, it was just amazing. And flirt with, he would pick a woman in the audience to flirt with, you know, and it could have been an older lady or whatever, but he would just flirt. And, you know, it was so funny. He would do all these great things. But he would always ask the horse's opinion, like, do you want to have a vacation now or keep performing? He would always ask the horse's opinion his whole life. And people thought, you know, this was crazy, but they had this beautiful relationship where he always respected his opinion. And this was at a time when, you know, thousands of horses would die a day in the streets of New York City. I mean, the horses were terribly abused. They were just treated like, you know, just like tools, you know. And here was this person who would talk to his horse and ask him what he wanted. And one day, you know, because he could have these whole conversations and things with the horse, a reporter came to visit him, and Doc Key said, well, take an apple with you, because after he shows you all these things that he can do, give him an apple. So the reporter had an apple, but he didn't give it to him. And afterwards, he said to Jim Key, so how was it, you know, being with the reporter? And the horse spelled out the word on a board, fruitless. So he spelled chocolate in his mouth. He said fruitless, because he never got his apple. So I just love the story of beautiful Jim Key. You can see videos online, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful story. So I think that really kind of maybe, you know, really, if you have any doubt that animals have opinions, read about the story about beautiful Jim Key, and you'll see how they really shared their opinions together. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about our program called Canines Teach Compassion. So I hope you'll join us for that.
Yay! Thank you, Jeannie. That was great.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Well, bye, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Aloha for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services. You can reach Michael Overly, author of Let Your Dog Lead, Musings on How to Create an Exceptional Life, on his website at dogsandmen.com or email michael@dogsandmen.com.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.